This is Channel 2.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
That was the news from Channel Radio Newsroom. Welcome back to the Business Bunker show here on Tuesday, the 9th of March. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews. We will be joined later in the show for a catch-up with Jules Serkin. But right now, we're going to hear from Rachel Gotto with one of the most amazing stories I've heard.
It's a pleasure now to welcome onto the Business Bunker show, Rachel Gotto. Rachel's over there in Galway in Ireland on the West Coast there. Good afternoon, Rachel. It's lovely to see you. Thank you for joining us.
Good afternoon to you as well. And it's lovely to join you this day.
Right now, some people call me Sherlock, okay, because I'm a bit of a detective. And you're in Galway, but you don't have an Irish accent.
Oh, I love it. The first question goes right in there. Well, very good question to ask, actually, because you're right. I've got what I call a kind of a mid-Irish sea accent. And the reason being, actually, Paul, is because in the late 60s, my rather eccentric father sold the house in Leeds,
right,
bought an old wooden boat and put the whole family on and sailed to Ireland. And the deal was we were going to sail to New Zealand. Thankfully, we never got there because I don't think that boat would have actually made it even across back over to France or anything. So we were sort of basically dumped in Cork, West Cork in Ireland. And that's where I was born, on the boat in a harbour called Glandour.
Were you really? And do you know, my maternal family are all from Cork.
Ah, okay. So maybe we have connections there.
Yeah, maybe. Know. But I wasn't born on a boat, though.
I know. I've got one up on you there, haven't I?
You certainly have. Oh, what a lovely story. I love it. Okay. Let's kick off by telling the listeners a bit about Rachel and what you do.
Yeah, I'd love to. So I think where I should start, really, is by saying that by the year 2012, I had pretty much lost everything that I held dear in my life.
Wow.
I'd lost my brother. I'd lost my husband. I was pregnant at the time. And then afterwards, I lost my health, Paul.
Wow.
I was found one morning unconscious with my daughter sitting on me, crying, please don't die, please don't die. And medical tests revealed that I actually had a benign inoperable brain tumor.
Oh my God.
And so this started a whole story in my life. I was really just still reeling from all the losses. And I was really only coming to terms of being a sole parent and figuring our futures and how to really navigate my world after so much trauma and tragedy.
Mm.
And so this brain tumor was completely life-stopping yet again.
Sure.
And so basically I went through about six neurology departments in six different hospitals. I ended up going to London and begging people to give me a chance of life.
Wow.
And the answer came back the same each time. We're really sorry. We would love to help you, but this tumor is so big and so dangerous that if we operated, you wouldn't survive.
Wow.
So you can imagine, I'm only really in my late 30s. I've got a small child. She's only five. I've lost my husband. I've lost pretty much everything. My father had died not so long after that. So I was faced with really challenging circumstances and making the most difficult decisions any human has to make.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I could not give up, Paul. I would not give up. I searched, I hunted, I asked, I researched. I had lots of support from my family. And, you know, that's always what I always say, never, ever give up. Because at the 11th hour, when I was really going to give up and resign myself to writing my will and writing letters to my daughter for her birthdays and weddings and all the things that you might miss, leaving a child behind. And one day somebody gave me an introduction to a neurologist who said, there's actually a maverick surgeon in Bristol. And why don't we send your scans to him? We did. And he wrote back. I never met him. He wrote back and he said, all right, I'll give it a go. But your chances of surviving aren't great. And if you do, you will be paralyzed down the left-hand side of your body for the rest of your life.
Wow.
Right. Guess what? Knowing my story now, Paul, what do you think happened? Yeah.
Yeah.
After nearly 15 hours of neurosurgery, I was paralyzed down the left-hand side of my body. I had survived, of course, and they'd got all the tumor, but now the next part of the story began, because now I had to learn to live as a dependent. Now I had to learn.
Just before you tell us that, a couple of things I'd like to ask, if you don't mind. One, I thought 2020 was quite bad, but 2012, it takes a biscuit for you, I think. But can I ask a question? I'm sorry to ask this, but it's something that I'm very passionate about. I'm passionate about brains and how they work. Okay.
For me too.
Yeah. And following the operation, you're paralyzed down the left side. In what area of your brain was the tumor?
The tumor was in the right frontal lobe.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So the great thing about it, as everybody's going saying, what was great about this? But the great thing was my speech was never involved. And that was one of my biggest fears, that I wouldn't be able to speak. And we know there's a lot of stroke patients who lose their speech, and it's terrifying and horrifying. So I lost all my motor skills down the left-hand side of my body.
Right.
So they didn't know actually how bad the damage was. Right. And so when I actually became really acutely aware, it was a real shock. And I remember the day when I tried to move and I couldn't, and I was starting to become more conscious in the hospital bed. And it felt like a weight of potatoes on my body. And so the whole journey that began then was actually to go to a brain injury unit after I'd recovered somewhat and learn to live with my difficulties and my disabilities.
Right.
I wasn't one to give up. I think we can sort of hear that.
I think we've figured that out. Yeah. You're a bit of a toughie, aren't you?
I'm a bit of a toughie. I think it was my childhood on the boat and learning to fish at a very young age and having to really, you know, tend to myself that actually gave me the kind of the grit, I think, that gave me that belief that I can do this.
Yeah.
I fought, I worked the weekends. I was not willing to stay where I was. I was not willing to take that prognosis.
Right.
And I'm aware we haven't got much time, so I'm going to move swiftly forward and say, I did learn to walk again. I learned to use my left hand again. Now, I also was left-handed. I had to learn to become right-handed. So if we're interested in brains, I had to rewire my brain to be right-handed well as learn to walk.
And how difficult did you find that?
Very, Paul.
Yeah.
It's not easy. I always, if anyone's listening and they want to know a little bit of how difficult it is, try and brush your teeth tonight with the other hand.
Yeah, I
promise you'll give up.
when I was much, 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 much younger, I was a footballer at a reasonable level. And my coaches kept saying to me, use your left foot, use your left foot. Oh, I couldn't use my left foot. I'd just fall over. And I had to practice and practice and practice. It's really hard, isn't it? Because it's just not, it doesn't feel natural. It just feels odd.
It isn't. And your brain's fighting you all the time, trying to get you to you know, switch back over. So I had lots to learn. I had a huge amount to gain, and I had a huge amount of tenacity and resilience in me. But, you know, it took me years and years and years to use my left hand again. I walked relatively quickly.
Right.
But I had a fallout of, can you imagine, all of the unprocessed grief, all of the unprocessed losses, everything was accumulating at this point. Yeah. Now, quickly, there was another part of the story that is vital. I was prescribed a lot of medication because I had really bad epilepsy, intractable seizures after neurosurgery. Right. So they had to keep adding in medication to keep my seizures at bay. Over the years, on 6 drugs 4 times a day, although I was learning to walk again and learning to live again, I was inadvertently becoming an accidental drug addict.
Right.
So that's why I say by the year 2012, I had lost pretty much everything. By 2012, I had lost all of those people in my life, but I also lost my mind.
Yeah.
And that was the biggest crux for me. So this is not going to all end up in a sort of a negative and dark story, because the good thing about this is that it is now 2021.
Yeah.
I managed to withdraw from those medications. I managed to gain my physicality back.
Mm.
I processed my grief. I worked through everything. And I knew there was a dark cloud still around me. And I needed to understand, how can I lead my best life? Mm. And this is what I love to talk about, is leading our best life, Paul.
Sure.
Because we can kind of go through life with blinkers on or with complacency or a bit of mediocrity. And I knew that when I came out of this, that lots had changed. And I knew that I had a choice to go one way or the other. I could live in mediocrity or I could go for gold. And that's what I chose to do.
Absolutely.
So I worked it.
Yeah. Now, sorry, let me, because you make me feel bad now, because what happened, listeners, before we started talking off air, I was just saying to Rachel, I'm having a really bad day. And Rachel was so sympathetic. Oh, I'm so sorry. And now I feel like a complete idiot because, you know, my bad day was I couldn't post on social media. And then Rachel tells us this story about her bad year. But it's instructive, isn't it?
Yeah.
It shows you how a lot of things that we think are bad in our life compared to what other people suffer are nothing at all. And that should be salutary in terms of how we handle things, how we handle bad news, especially minor bad news like mine, like I'm having a bad day. You know, but you can get quite depressed by having a bad day. And I think once you hear a story like yours, you suddenly go, do you know what? That's just ridiculous. You know, I'm just so lucky. It's unbelievable.
Absolutely, Paul. I totally agree. But the only thing is everybody's pain is relative, okay?
Yeah.
And so I sort of think the thing that we need to learn is I'm a coach, I'm a clinical hypnotherapist, I'm a speaker, and my memoir will be coming out in November, which maybe I'll be able to talk about in a second.
Yeah.
So, you know, I managed to train to work with people about this, and I'm very clear that just because it's not a brain tumor, for want of a bad expression, it doesn't mean it's relevant. It's not relevant, rather.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing is it's how we respond to our difficulties,
yeah,
and how we come into the moment and ask ourselves, how can we change the moment right this minute? How can we turn this around into something? And it doesn't have to be Pollyanna-ish, Paul. It's just about a practice of changing the mindset. And you and I like minds, and we know a lot about the mind, and we know that the mind is naturally negative.
Sure.
It will naturally be negative.
Yeah.
So it's about learning to use those skills. And that's what I teach my clients, is how to harness the mind.
Absolutely. And you're absolutely right. And what tends to happen, and it happens to all of us, and I'm sure it happens to you sometimes as well, it happens to all of us, when we face a difficulty in our life, we have a tendency to dwell on the difficulty. Yeah. Oh, you know, poor me, this is not working, I hate this,
oh,
I don't like this. Yeah, no, no.
Yes.
What you did, though, what you did to try to overcome all those things that beset you is you focused on a solution.
You got it. Absolutely.
You focused on looking for a solution. You didn't give up hope. You tried as many avenues as you could. And even when that kind of half worked and presented you with another set of problems, you didn't go, oh, well, you know, I've half got there, we'll call it quits now and we'll just, no, you carried on looking for the ultimate solution.
And, absolutely.
And for me, I think that is the biggest mindset issue that 99% of us face, is that we don't, when we're faced with a dilemma, we don't look for the solution. We kind of wallow in the problem.
Yeah, and that's absolutely right. Well, the thing is that from my point of view, I had to define a vision.
Mm.
And funny enough, when I was going through the drug withdrawal, which was horrific,
mm,
I was addicted to benzodiazepines. Mm. I had 47 symptoms, psychological and physical symptoms, that lasted 2.5 years. It took me 2.5 years. I did not leave my house in that 2.5 years. How did I keep going?
Mm.
Because, Paul, I had a vision of a better life in my mind's eye. It was hard to hold on to it. It was hard to keep the faith. It was hard to keep doing what I had to do to come through this time. But when you can define a vision, a purpose and a meaning, and also get hungry. I think getting hungry for where you need to be, you're an entrepreneur, so you understand that hunger for getting somewhere. I believe that with practice, we can cultivate a hunger.
Mm.
When we define a certain level of parameters and goals in our mind, because motivation alone, to my mind, doesn't last. Motivation gets you kick-started.
Yep.
But then we've got to find ways of staying in that vein of success. And it is about being curious, curiosity. How can I be better? How can I be more curious about life? So I kind of devise my own way. And that's what I use in my coaching with my clients now. And I mix it in with the hypnotherapy if it's needed to remove subconscious blocks. But you know what? The mind is plastic. The mind is malleable. And I'm living proof of that quite literally.
It's interesting what you say about motivation. It's very true. Many years ago, when I had a proper job and I worked for somebody else, they stupidly gave me a senior management job when I was very, very young. And I just found people odd. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to read the manual, find out how this works. And I read loads and loads and loads of stuff. One of the things that fascinated me was motivation. What motivates people? But what you were saying is, and this is quite true, and I can't remember who it was now, it was some famous management group. Anyway, they said that the problem with motivation is it's actually a hygiene theory. And what that is that you're motivated by something until you've got it, and then it doesn't motivate you anymore. So for instance, if I came along and said, I'm going to give you a pay rise, you might work a bit harder. But once I give you the pay rise, then it drops off. And God forbid, if I came along and went, whoa, Rachel, sorry, it wasn't you. I'm going to have to take the money away. You haven't lost anything, but you are severely demotivated.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's a hygiene thing. But it doesn't last. You have to go to the next level all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's a bit like compound interest in the bank, you know. You've got to stack your successes. It doesn't, people say to me, oh, how did you get here? And I'm saying, because I stacked success on top of success, and they weren't big successes, Paul. Yeah. Success comes from minor little steps, and we stack them all up till we actually are standing on our own platform. And it takes time. There is no magic bullet. Mm. But what I do say to my clients and anyone when I'm speaking in interviews is, you will start to feel something. And when you start to feel something, this is the time that you cultivate.
Yeah.
You know, get curious and start to cultivate the energy of your own success. Celebrate every little milestone. Find ingenious ways to navigate. It's a bit like staying present for yourself, offering yourself the best. And if you fall off the wagon, don't look at it as if you've gone right back to scratch. Just see it as, I'm getting back on the wagon and I'm starting again today. And you know, this works. You've got to put your head into it. You've got to really cement yourself in, and you've got to be hungry for it. It's not going to happen for you if you're not hungry for it, just like anything in life. But I promise that if you really do want this, you will feel so empowered just by starting alone. And write stuff out. That's a great way of starting. Get yourself fired up.
I love what you're saying. The way that I refer to what you called stacking it is a process of evolution. Each step, each random step takes you to the next level. And sometimes it throws you over here or over there, but that isn't necessarily going to take you off track. You just got to find a different way back onto the track. I love that. Fantastic. What a story. Incredibly inspiring what you've achieved coming out the other side of it. So I just want to focus for the last few minutes of the interview now, Rachel, on your actual business, if you see what I mean. So what you do, how we can find out more about you. And I think you said you're in the process of publishing a book. Is that right?
Yes, I am. Flying on the Inside is actually due for publication with Amazon on the 1st of November.
Right.
And it's available on pre-order now. You can go to my author page, Rachel Gotto, at Amazon, and look up Flying on the Inside, and you can pre-order it. I think it's at a special discount at the moment, so it's a really nice time to buy it.
Right.
I work primarily as a coach and as a clinical hypnotherapist. Right. I got into clinical hypnotherapy because I figured out that I'd somehow clumsily been doing neuroscience at home in my bedroom when I was rewiring my brain and body to work and cultivating this you know, wonderful life that I'm so grateful for. Yeah. So I work very deeply with my clients. I'm solution focused. And so you can come to me for coaching or a mix of both. And of course, I'm a speaker. I love to share about my life because I think in these dark times, it's vital that we have stories where people have truly walked through the darkness and come to the light. So if anyone wants to inquire about me speaking, that's absolutely wonderful. And you can find me actually on rachelgotto.com. I'm just in the middle of rebranding and putting some online courses there, but the old website is still there. I'm very current on Twitter at Rachel Gotto, and I have a lovely Instagram page which is Rachel V Gotto, where I share a little bit of insights into my own private world and a little bit about my life in Ireland. I love hens, Paul. I have hens at home.
Do you?
Yes, I do. So pictures of those. Yeah, I'm one of these people who keeps hens.
Hens. Okay. And do you keep hens as pets, as show animals, or are you a breeder? Are you a breeder of exotic hens? How does that work?
No, I've got Biscuit, Geraldine, Anna, Ernie, and Maud. Okay, they're definitely pets. I don't eat them. I don't show them, but I do eat their eggs.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, oh, that's lovely. So the book's coming out in November. You can pre-order it on Amazon. You've had a fantastic story there, and it's incredibly inspiring, what you've said to us. And right at the moment, and I'm sure it's fairly much the same in Ireland as it is here in the UK, we have a mental health epidemic on our hands. Because of the pandemic, because of the lockdowns, because we've all been shut indoors for a year, the rates of mental health are going, problems are going through the roof. I'm the chairman of a charity that looks after people with addictions, drink and drug addictions. And we're 50 years old this year, and we have never been as busy, sadly. Very sadly, we're a residential home and we can only handle so many people. We've got a massive waiting list. We've never had a waiting list before. We've got a massive waiting list of people. You know, so the kind of work you do is going to become crucial and critical as this unwinds, because so many people have suffered, you know, depression and mental health issues. And as it unwinds, it's going to get worse for a little while, because at the moment, I think the Irish government, like the UK government, are kind of paying people to stay at home and all that kind of stuff. That's got to stop at some point, which point, you know, we're all going to find out we've lost our jobs or businesses have gone bust and it's going to get worse. So, you know, we're all going to be facing a lot of dilemmas in our lives that we weren't expecting to face. So your story, your insights and your inspiration are going to be even more important than they were, and they were very important before. So, Rachel, thank you so much for joining us on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Just give us one more shout out for your website so that people can find out more about you.
Yes, it's rachelgotto.com and Twitter at Rachel Gotto. You'll find me somewhere there all the time and you can get in touch. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you, Paul.
That was a pleasure. Let me just spell that so people can find it. It's Rachel, R-A-C-H-E-L, and Gotto, G-O-T-T-O.
That's right, rachelgotto.com.
.com. Fantastic. Rachel, thank you so much for joining us on The Bunker Show. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. You are such an inspirational lady. And I'm really glad that the lovely Samantha Kelly introduced us, because it's been a fantastic story to hear from you. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon and we'll see you again soon.
Good afternoon, Paul. Thank you.
Become part of our community to build your social media habits with workouts. Increase your brand's presence and engagement. Go to wedosocialmedia.co.uk to register for 2 free social media workouts every Wednesday, 10:30 a.m. Facebook and 11:30 a.m. LinkedIn.
Loch Associates Group can help you with your employment law, HR, health and well-being and mediation needs. People are our business. It's what we do every day. Find us online at lochassociates.co.uk.
Jobsinkent.com, the quick and simple way to advertise your job vacancies in Kent, with prices from just £99 per job per month. Visit Kent's largest job site, jobsinkent.com.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
the absolutely amazing, inspirational and awesome Rachel Gotto there. What a fantastic interview. What a story. We've had quite a few reactions to that. Obviously, I'm going to read a few. But we are kind of running out of time. Athel Bray Limited said, we're a bit late to the party, but we tuned in live to hear Rachel's interview. So thank you for that. Tracy Ferguson, wow, what a great story to start the interview with Rachel. And then Tracy goes on to say, I agree, Paul, what an amazing story of resilience and determination. You said earlier about how out of great adversity comes some great businesses. Out of great adversity comes some wonderful, amazing, inspirational people like Rachel. Absolutely, couldn't agree with you more. I mean, it's just unbelievable story. Tracy goes on to say, our first thought may be a negative one. It's what we choose to think next, which makes all the difference. Absolutely. Absolutely it does. And Samantha Kelly, looking for the solution instead of worrying in the problem. What a great interview with Rachel Gotto. Absolutely, Sam. I couldn't agree with you more. Just such an inspirational story. And we've got loads more stuff on that. And we've got to move on, sadly, because we are fast running out of time. And we've got a lot more things to cover. But we shall come back to talking about Rachel's story, I'm sure, not just this week, but in subsequent weeks, as we look at that for our inspiration to carry on. Now, I managed to catch up with the stonkingly gorgeous Jules Serkin again for another one of our rant sessions. So why don't we hear what Jules had to say this week?
It's the stonkingly gorgeous Jules Serkin. Hello.
With the dirty hair.
Yeah, you need to wash your hair, you do.
Actually, I'm one of those people, Paul Andrews. I'm really lucky with my hair. I rarely brush it. I sort of wake up and just tousle it about with my fingers. Mm. And you probably do the same.
I do.
And off I go. I don't really do much.
I just get up in the morning, run my hand through my hair, and there it is, done.
Exactly. Yeah. But I was going to have a little swim this morning quite early, but I had a lovely architect chap came round to measure the house. Mm. And, of course, we had to keep our distance. Off he went. It's all different nowadays, you know. It's not like when we were at school, the little click wheel.
Mm.
He's got a sort of an electronic beam that he beams around.
There's one on your iPhone.
Is there?
Yeah, there's one on your iPhone.
I could just measure my whole house.
Yeah, on your iPhone, it's a standard app on your iPhone that comes preloaded where you can measure stuff. Did you not?
Well, you could have saved me money. I've had a man round for 2 hours.
Yeah, well, you didn't need a man round. You just needed your iPhone.
I could have just sent it to him.
Yeah, exactly.
Save a couple of quid.
Anyway, why were you having it measured up?
Well, it's the ongoing saga of the balconies.
Right.
Because you may remember years
Romeo,
ago.
Romeo, wherefore art thou, Romeo?
You've been on the balcony again,
have you, Jules?
Well, no. You do remember years ago we had that lovely man from, I think he was Broadstairs or Ramsgate, who was an architect engineer. It was years ago.
Yeah.
And he was on a job scheme or something. Do you remember him?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Young chap. And I actually emailed him afterwards about my balconies and invited him to a slope off, and I never heard from him. So whether he didn't check his emails or whether I went into junk, I don't know, and I didn't persevere. But I have just paid an architect, quite a well-known, very good architect, $2,000 to do balconies and all sorts of things, because we're sea-facing, as you know, for the top floor. And he got uppity, Paul Andrews. He'd had $2,000 and he got uppity because we asked him just to be a bit bolder with the balcony and, you know, we wanted to raise the roof and he got very uppity.
In what way? Cruel, that cost you more than $2,000, love.
I tell you who we'd had round. Do you remember you had on your show I've forgotten what he is, Norman, who does the balconies, and you had him, he's on our Twitter.
Oh, I can't remember.
Yeah, anyway, yeah. He's a developer and he does...
Metal Frames. Yeah.
Lovely guy. So yeah. After the show, I wasn't actually on that show for some reason. Mm. I think I was on holiday or something in the old days when we were allowed. And he invited me to his balcony with my new husband and his lovely lady. And we went up to the balcony, and it's just overlooking Tankerton Slopes. And it was lovely. Mm. And so we asked him round for beers, as you do, and olives and things. Mm. And he's a developer. He's done a beautiful job on his flats, and he's got the top flat. And so I asked his opinion, and he just said, I think he should be bigger. He should have done more. It's just a small balcony, and we've got views of Herne Bay and right over to Sheppey. So we said this to this lovely architect, and he got very upset, and he said, well, you know, people go to committees and they talk about these things and they discuss these things, and it can go on forever. I said, well, it's only one friend, you know, and who just knows about balconies, and said that we could be a bit bolder. And he said, well, we'll get him to do it then. And I said, well, he's a developer, he's not an architect. And we never heard from him again. So he's gone all uppity. I won't mention his name. Lovely chap.
So he's a one-dimensional balcony architect then.
He just didn't like, he saw it as criticism, and it wasn't. And Gav and I are so nice to deal with, and we're lovely. And we had him round, we gave him olives and peanuts and wine and cider in the garden. And, you know, anyway, apparently the guy that I'm using now, who's a company called Invent, used to work for him, and they said, you can't tell him, he gets very,
I'll tell him anything, he's no. Old school, yeah.
Yeah, so
anyway, so you
how do we get on to that?
I've no idea. you've got a balcony coming.
But with the planning laws, I said I'd like the work to be done in October, because I am getting on in years, you know, I mean, I've got horse's teeth, I'm very old. Amanda will tell you that. You look at a horse's teeth, you can tell its age. Mm. So I'm getting a bit long in the tooth. So I said I'd like it ideally to schedule the work for October, which I thought was being quite, you know, well advanced. Mm. And he absolutely shrieked and said, there's no way, no way in October. It's going to be next year, by which time I'll be even older.
Absolutely.
Might even be dead.
Well, no, let's not go there. But, you know, you certainly will be older, probably.
How is your... have you had your jab yet? Your
I got another letter this morning. Oh. I got another... This is my third one from the NHS. You haven't had your jab. Yet we highly recommend, our experts say you should have your jab. And then in big letters it says, if you want your jab from your GP, ignore this letter.
Oh.
So that's the third letter I've ignored, but my GP hasn't contacted me.
Well, a little bit similar.
Doesn't
here.
That sum up the NHS? They are completely and totally inefficient.
And all that money. Well, the funny thing is, Paul Andrews, that I haven't heard from my GP, but I had an NHS England letter telling me to book it. So I went on, and it was saying Holland-on-Sea. Where's Holland-on-Sea? I've no
Essex.
Idea. It was saying
they must E17. Have known where you're from.
Yeah, they must have. I was thinking it'd be an excursion. I got quite excited. And E17, and I thought, well, I could go and see my lovely young son, Shay. That would be another excursion. I haven't been out for a year. So I booked it, and then I found Canterbury Odeon. So I'm going to Canterbury Odeon tomorrow.
You're going to the pictures?
Yeah. Do you think there'll be popcorn?
You're going to see a film about vaccination.
But it's really annoying because I want the Pfizer one. I know
you don't get a choice.
You don't get a choice. And I know now it's going to be, because they allowed me, a bit of inside information here, Paul Andrews, because they allowed me to book my second one at the time, which is May the 21st. Mm-hmm. My birthday is May 26th, so I'll be second vaccinated. Very good, yeah. All presents greatly received, especially large bottles of things. But but when you book it, if you get the second one, when you book the first one, then you know it's not Pfizer, it is the Oxford vaccine. Bit of insider information there.
Right, but does that mean that they've mixed the vaccines, or does it mean that's the second one of the same vaccine?
I think... Yeah, no, I think it's because they know that they can store, this is my layman's thing, they can store the Oxford one, can't they, in a fridge. So they know that, I don't know, they know they've got the supply. Because she said to me, because I then rang my doctor's surgery, because my new husband, the next day, who's 13 years younger than me, absolutely fit, healthy, windsurfs, jogs, got an appointment from our GP. And yeah. I haven't had one, and I'm autoimmune, and my lungs don't work. And
well, you're too difficult for them. They can't cope. They can't cope with you.
You've heard me puff when I come in the studio. I can't breathe.
Yeah, yeah.
So he has got an appointment. So I phoned up the secretary, who I know very well. Apparently, my name comes up on their phone.
Yeah. And they'll run away. They go, no, I'm on the phone. Pretend we're circling. Out. Pretend we're out.
Well, I've had quite a few battles in the back, my dad and then my mum and various.
No, you've never mentioned it on Twitter.
Well, they do cock up things. Anyway, they're lovely and they work really hard, the staff, but there's something wrong there with the infrastructure and the way it's run, in my opinion. But so I said, you know, why is my husband? She said, oh, but he's got an underlying health problem. I said, he's out jogging. He's fit as a fiddle. You know, he's skinny as a rake, and he's got no asthma or anything. You remember when he hit his head and he fell off his bike after Mariam's thing, book launch? Oh, no, it was her party, wasn't it? Her birthday. She was 21. Well, because of that, it's flagged him up as an underlying health condition because he fell off his bike and hit his head. I mean, really?
Is that a new symptom for COVID then, is it? Have you had a bicycle accident in the last 10 years?
I mean, he is batty. He can't remember anything. And I do give him fish oil. So I'm wondering, you know, he's vague. So I'm now wondering if he's got, you know. But what a funny thing. So anyone with a head injury apparently is right up there. So I'm going to the Odeon and he's going to the lovely drive-in one.
Right.
But he's also uppity because he only wants the Pfizer one because the other one, as far as we know, doesn't have efficacy. It's my new word of the week with the South African virus.
See, I'd really like the Johnson & Johnson one.
Yeah, well, we'd all like that.
Yeah, it's just a quick spurt up the nose, isn't it?
Yeah,
no needles or anything, and just one off.
Can we get that?
No.
Because in South Africa they're using a mix, then they won't use the Oxford one, and you know we work quite a lot in Africa, so I'm not sure. I feel like I'm wasting my time having the Oxford one, to be honest.
No, I mean the results on it, the efficacy is quite high. It's 98% or something,
but not on the South African variant as far as I read.
Oh, get over with all that nonsense. Yeah,
I need this to time there, you know.
This time next week there'll be a Mongolian one, a Mongolian variant, and then there'll be I'm waiting for the Aberdeen variant. Ooh, Aberdeen.
I need to go to South Africa to get my Cape Malay spices and my rooibos tea.
Right, okay.
As well as my diamonds, of course. What did you think of the budget, young thing?
Interesting. It's
a little bit of help for SMEs, I thought.
Hopefully. Yeah, I mean, my problem is it's a difficult thing to do. And I, you know, I appreciate how hard it is considering where we are. But the reality is we shouldn't be where we are. You know, and keeping us locked down again until September is madness. It's utter madness.
I know.
And there's some good things. The new super deductions for capital investments of 130% of capital investments is a good way to reinvest in businesses for the next couple of years, which is what we need. But then once you've done that, they're going to put corporation tax up to 25% or whatever it is.
So it's a give and a take.
Well, the problem with that is there's places nearby like Dublin where it's half that. So a lot of big corporates are just going to up sticks again and go back there. So I'm not really sure what the point of that was. Freezing fuel duty is a given.
We're not driving anywhere anyway.
We haven't been anywhere anyway, so, you know.
The highlight of my week this week has been going to Pets at Home to get some dog biscuits.
Yeah. What I couldn't reconcile, though, was that he's frozen the tax-free allowance levels for the next few years, okay, which I understand. Yeah. So they're not going to go up. And then he came out with a statement that said, but you're not going to be any worse off. Well, that doesn't make any sense. That just doesn't make any sense. So I don't know how he intends to work that. But and then the living wage goes up this April anyway.
Yeah. What's it going up to?
I think it's $8.91, I think.
I thought it already was that.
Well, it could be. I don't know. I've lost track because no one's got a job anyway. So
the thing, as I've said to you before, is hospitality and hairdressers. A lot of them live with their tips as well, and a lot of them are
with their what?
With their tips.
Oh, tips.
Yes. You know, my young niece is £300 a month down from tips. You know, tips, that she gets. Yeah. I've always hated the tip thing.
She's got big tips, has she?
She does get $300 a month, Orlando.
Blimey, that's
we are on air, darling.
Oh, yeah, sorry, yeah.
You know, we are recording. Because I have said to the listener that it does get more raucous off air, of course.
It does, yeah.
I'll be interested to see, but I think, I understand that many people are suffering, but when I saw the furlough go on to September, I just said to new husband, our beaches will be packed again. Yeah. There'll be more drunken, disorderly behaviour that we've seen certainly in the seafront.
To my mind, they're just kicking the problem into the long grass with that.
Yeah.
Because they know full well that once furlough ends, it's going to be Armageddon. So many people are going to lose their jobs. But the problem is, the longer you keep it going, the more organisations you drag into that. Yeah, because if our staff aren't working for another 9 months, we're not going to make any income for another 9 months.
Yeah.
And therefore, we're going to be in a worse position than we were. So we're going to be 2 years in to no income, and more companies will go bust, more will, you know, fall by the wayside.
And move to Dublin.
And the bigger ones will move to Dublin or some other low tax environment in Europe or wherever.
Would you like me to read an email?
Yeah, read one for the moment.
Okay, this is quite a good one, talking about hospitality. So Wetherspoon will open its beer gardens at half of its pubs when lockdown restrictions lift next month.
That's half its Kent pubs, isn't it?
Is it just Kent?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, it's got a little list underneath. Thank you. You've obviously pre-read these.
Yeah.
So pint-starved punters are set to flock back to boozers when landlords are allowed to turn the taps back on April the 12th. So there'll be various ones, as the Humphrey Bean in Tonbridge, Leading Light and Faversham. I don't know any of these. I don't go to chains, you see.
No.
I don't know them. The Royal Victoria Pavilion, Ramsgate, the Peter Cushing and Whitstable, I do know, because it used to be a beautiful theatre cinema.
Yeah.
And there was an uproar when they took it over because we lost our cinema. The Thomas Waghorn in Chatham, the Bell and Lion in Sheerness, the Golden Hope in Sittingbourne, and many, many others, Petswood, Bromley, Bexley Heath. So they're going to open with the gardens. So, yeah, there'll be the old patio warmers and eating out, won't there?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So that's 18 of them opening in Kent and opening the gardens rather than the pub. Yeah.
And there'll be a lot of the lovely free houses that I love. And I'll keep you abreast of that. And who's opening and who's not.
Well, I mean, it's going to sound crazy, but let's hope global warming kicks in so that it's nice and warm over Easter and the Maybank holidays.
Can't tell, because last year, God, this is how long we've been in lockdown, Paul. And last year, the new husband's birthday is May the 5th, and we obviously had to be outside in the garden last year. And there was my mother and my son, Josh, Ibiza Fitness Food, and his lady, and we were absolutely shivering outside. We had the patio heater on, we had coats, hats. I think it's all on my Twitter. And we were freezing. We sat out there till midnight. We were determined. I had to get very drunk because I was just so cold.
Oh, well, you would, really, wouldn't you? Yeah.
Brandy.
There's no option. Yeah.
My little fingers, you know, frostbite. How did your gin tasting go?
It was very good. I had a gin. I didn't drink any. Amanda did the tasting. And I just watched. It was interesting. What would you call it? An artisan gin maker in Northampton called Warners, and they own their own farm. and they grow all their own botanicals. They grow their own juniper berries. They grow their own sloes and all that kind of stuff for making gin. And they claim to have invented original pink gin, which is rhubarb gin.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Delicious. Did you have a mocktail? You could have had a mocktail gin.
I just drank the tonic water. But Amanda tried the gins and loved them. And it was interesting. It was interesting because they went through how they made the gin, what was in it, how to construct a gin. And one of the interesting things the chap was saying is a lot of people say don't put ice in a gin, and he went, that's totally wrong, put loads of ice in. And talking about that, and talking about with one of them it went really nice if you put a bit of sage in the glass as well.
Sage is very good for your brain.
Yeah, so it was interesting. It was an interesting hour. And then it was staged by an investment company who organized it. And in between the tastings, they did some stuff on their ethical investment programs and stuff.
Okay, so if you want to put me through to them via Stu or whoever, or you, I can pass that on to my daughter Sydney and also to Shay, because Shay at Softcat and Sydney, I've forgotten the name of her company now, was Make It Cheaper, and they've rebranded, but they're always doing these Friday evening sort of rah-rah team building things, so maybe it would be good for that.
Absolutely. It was interesting. It was interesting, even though I didn't drink any of the gin.
You just watched Amanda get slowly sozzled.
She was good. So read another email.
There's an apprentice, Paul Andrews, from
Rochester. This is a goodie, this one. I like this one.
He's calling on local people and his fellow colleagues to pursue the career they've always wanted to by applying now for one of over 1,000 new full-time Amazon apprenticeships available. And the recruitment has started for 25 different apprenticeship schemes, ranging from engineering to broadcast production, creative digital design to health, safety and environmental technician. Also, 100 degree level apprenticeships are available in automation, engineering, project management, software development and chartered management. This is great because I keep rambling on about apprenticeships. Over 500 new apprenticeships will be offered to Amazon's existing workforce, providing opportunities to retrain and gain new skills, leading to an exciting new career path. Apprenticeships exclusively for Amazon employees range from a team leader through to a coaching practitioner, and the roles pay a minimum of £10.80 per hour, so that's above the minimum wage.
It's above the living wage, yeah.
Yeah, in Rochester. Up to 30,000 a year for degree level apprenticeships. In addition to being fully funded, apprentices also receive a comprehensive benefits package, which includes private medical insurance. I wonder if you can get your jab privately on that. I don't think you can yet. Life assurance, income protection, subsidized meals, and an employee discount, which combined is worth more than £700 annually, as well as a company pension plan. So the new apprentices will join current apprentices already working at Amazon Rochester. Well, that's some positive news.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because I quite often have these kind of arguments with people that don't know, and there's a lot of them about working for big corporates like Amazon or Tesco's or McDonald's. And when you talk to people about that, especially students and their parents, and you say, have you considered working at Amazon or have you considered working at McDonald's? They just assume there's one job. And the job at Amazon is packing boxes, and the
flipping
job at
burgers.
McDonald's is flipping burgers. But of course it isn't. You know, there's thousands of different jobs that they do, you know, from logistics, as you just read out, you know, engineering, coding, digital design, marketing. There's a whole range of different work that these people do.
And plus you get the corporate training that you perhaps, you know, maybe some smaller businesses would struggle to give.
Yeah, exactly.
I think if you can learn from somewhere like McDonald's, you're set up for life almost.
Absolutely. And it's not, you know, okay, sometimes you do start on the bottom line of a business, but that's, you know, there's career paths, there's places to go, there's things to learn, there's things to do. And people never look at that. They just go, oh, I don't want to flip burgers, you know, for £8 an hour. Well, no one does, but, you know, you've got to start somewhere. But you
tell
don't
you what, it's made me fancy a Big Mac now.
But you don't have to start somewhere. You know, you can go and join one of those companies in all kinds of, you know, they've got HR, they've got accounting, they've got IT, they've got all kinds of things. They've got transport and logistics. So there's lots of different things you can do, and people don't always recognize that when they're looking at career potentials or places to start work. So I was particularly interested in that email because I thought it was really useful, and it was written it was written by a young apprentice that's already signed up to the apprenticeship scheme.
Oh, really? And also the perks are fantastic. I mean, there's a lot of perks there, you know, for you. As they've said, they're worth more than £700 a year. So it's worth, and also the company pension plan, that's great. So they're going to look after you. That's one thing that perhaps you wouldn't get if you're working for yourself or somebody else. Yeah. There's also a new green business mapping and pilot support program that's been launched, Paul Andrews, for the Southeast, and that's called the Clean Growth Southeast Program. It's led by Kent County Council, KCC, with funding secured from the Southeast Local Enterprise Partnership Sector. It's a support fund. And the programme provides updated insights into the challenges and opportunities for businesses across a range of low-carbon, renewable energy and environmental goods and service sectors. So for that, you get your all key sectors that directly deliver against the UK government's 10-point plan for a green industrial revolution. Businesses of Kent seeking clean growth are invited to register their interest in this new programme, which offers insights into the emerging opportunities and practical measures to support local green growth. Clean growth sectors include, and they're not limited in this, but they include low carbon and renewable electricity generation and their supply chains. And the programme can help companies working across these areas. So you've got your renewable energy, which is your wind, solar, nuclear, your bioenergy, forestry and timber, manufacturers, engineering suppliers of energy efficient products, environmental products and services, waste management, sustainable construction, and low carbon financial and advisory services. Now, to find out more, you can go to 3Ws, OPERG, that's OP for Peter, ERGY.co.uk, put a little /projects/collaborative projects. I'm sure all details are on Kent Biz Radio.
Yeah, we'll put them on the radio website. Fantastic. There's lots of things happening there. Just one quick shout out as well. Some friends of mine that run a Kent based eco energy company are looking for space in the preferably in the Faversham area, but they'll look anywhere in mid East Kent. They're looking for a lot of warehouse space with office space, but it has to be tall. Yeah, because they're constructing pylons inside as well. If anybody knows of anything, just give me a shout. That would be lovely. But I think that's kind of brought us to the end of this little catch-up, Jules. I can't hear you.
The Federation of Small Businesses News Roundup. Offering advice and guidance for small businesses and the self-employed.
The UK's largest business organisation, the Federation of Small Business, will use this year's International Women's Day theme to focus on the challenges and successes of women in enterprise over the past 12 months. Business owners from across the UK are invited to take part in the online event on the 18th of March, where an all-female panel will be interviewed by FSB National Chair for Women in Enterprise, Deborah Turner. On March the 18th, we'll be hearing from women in enterprises who, despite difficulties and barriers, have managed to not only keep trading, but also to scale, adapt and succeed. We'll hear about the skills, knowledge and connections they've used to overcome the challenges of the past year. Throughout the month, the Women in Enterprise will be celebrated on FSB social media, so do check that out. But we've reached the end of the show for this week. We'll be back with another show next week. Do stay safe. We'll see you all soon.